Hello, and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I'm Maddie Lipchansky.
And I am Clayton Ashley.
This week, it is episode 3 of season 1, Fight or Flight, and the week of September 27th to October 3rd, 2001. Hey, Clayton, how you doing?
Hey, so some big news happened since the last time we recorded this, and I feel like it's important that I start with this.
Okay.
I was just bugging me so much, I had to know if I knew what Stained was.
If you knew what Stained, like the band.
While. It's been a while.
Sure, it's been a while since you thought about Stained.
It's been a while since I thought about Stained, okay. And I watched the music video and I did remember that one. Mm-hmm. So that was in my brain somehow. Important update.
Stained in the brain.
Stained in the brain.
That's a huge, thank you so much for keeping me posted on whether or not you know what Stained is, which it's been, you know what, I'm so glad you brought this up because it has been keeping me up at night. I went to the doctor, my blood pressure was spiking, and he said, what's wrong? And I was like, well, you know, this guy I do a podcast with, I don't know if he knows about Stained. Okay, so just to get into culture at the time, in terms of music, there was nothing really new, so I'm going to skip right past that.
No problem.
No problemos there.
We music, covered that already. Stained was a band.
Stained was there. Everyone is still listening to Alicia Keys's Fallen, climbing up the charts insanely, was Enrique Iglesias's Hero. So just maybe a spoiler for future weeks that we're going to get there. Maybe. I'm rooting for you, Enrique, so we can talk about that song. In the world of entertainment, the show Scrubs premiered that week and ran for approximately 70,000 seasons, I think.
Is that, can we say that's one of the things that maybe held up a little better than most from this era?
You know what? Probably, though I have not watched it since I was a child when it was on. I was like a middle teenager in 2001 at this time. Like we are, you know, a couple months before my 16th birthday here. And I'm kind of like, is it one of those things where is it good or are we just being nostalgic about the show Scrubs?
Yeah.
I simply don't know.
I didn't watch it at the time, but it is a show where I have seen stuff.
Okay.
I'm not going to say recently. Honestly, this is probably more like short internet clip heyday of the mid-aught 16s. I don't know what you would call that era. When I worked a desk job. And so sometimes I would see like a scene. People were like, remember that from Scrubs?
Remember that magic janitor?
The magic janitor.
Or he was like a mean janitor, but he was magic.
He had powers.
I think he was just sort of. Anyways, I think it's one of those shows where it has aged poorly merely in its like sort of like millennial cringe factor and less like it's evil.
Yeah, that's, you know, a better look for a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's, you know, you either live long enough to become cringe. Or I can't remember the rest of that.
Or extremely problematic.
Yeah, exactly. And we're cringe, so Zach Braff, who is problematic, I think.
Yeah,
he just keeps dating like children is his main thing, and that's not great.
And he's in an awful, awful commercial for whatever it is, I don't want to remember.
Him and Donald Faison are in it. Faison.
And
reunited
from
the Scrubbers.
Yeah.
On that commercial.
I hate it.
It's not good. They're like, they're singing?
Yeah.
They rap? No, they're not rapping. They're singing.
Unfortunately, I don't know if that would be worse, but they're not rapping.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just ready at all moments to be like, they're rapping when they shouldn't be. This is Lin-Manuel Miranda's evil reach into society. But okay. So Scrubs is premiered. that week is also Farm Aid 14, featuring just some luminaries of the time like Dave Matthews and John Mellencamp. Just some lovely, this is the sound of 2001 wafting into your ears.
Talk about wafting. We got Doobie Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like a bit of a throwback.
The Doobie Brothers and Willie Nelson there.
Yeah. Even Neil.
And Neil Young. Yeah, that seems fine to me. And in the world of movies, there's a couple of new on the charts this week are two movies that are the top three spots. Number one and number three are movies I have not heard of.
Okay. Oh, I'm excited.
But they do not exist to me, but they are real. at number three, premiering this week, is Hearts in Atlantis.
What?
Which is a, what's his name? Anthony Hopkins film based on a a story from a Dark Tower companion book Stephen King. A young boy's life changes for the better when a mysterious man with psychic powers moves into the family home that he shares with his widowed mother.
What?
I think the box office is still limping back at this moment.
But this would have been... Why did they make a Dark Tower spinoff?
They're saying it's loosely adapted from Stephen King's Dark Tower tie-in, Low Men in Yellow Coats.
Can you make that poster bigger? For some reason,
It doesn't get bigger. It's one of those Wikipedia images that becomes smaller somehow.
I don't know why that picture... It's Anthony Hopkins with his hand...
against like a window.
Or glass, yeah, and then a smaller hand on it.
The tagline is really killer.
Oh.
What if one of life's great mysteries moved in upstairs? It really makes you think. So movies used to have taglines. It used to be a real, you know. Number two is simply... our friend Zoolander.
Oh, no.
Making $18.8 million in its first week in the box office.
This is when Zoolander came out.
I love, this is an incredible, just like the plot description.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of his career, a clueless fashion model is brainwashed to kill the Prime Minister of Malaysia. And I suppose that is the plot of Zoolander.
Do you think that had to be re-edited at all? Were they worried about it having to be re-edited at all because of 9/11?
You know what? That's a really good point. Or, conversely, are Americans simply racist enough that they didn't worry about it?
They didn't worry about it. And it, I guess technically no one in government got...
Yeah, no. People certainly in the Pentagon... were killed.
Sorry, they are government people. I don't.
They were certainly.
That. They did.
No one high up in the
but
government.
But yeah, it wasn't
got
a targeted assassination of a prime minister.
And you're referring to what of it?
Oh, sorry, you're right. The crisp
autumn morning. I'm trying to engineer reverse engineer a bit where we do not acknowledge 9/11 on this show.
Yeah, and I immediately.
It's simply impossible. It is strange that they're like making, you know, the Strokes take New York City Cops off their album, and they're making Jimmy Eat World. Change the title of Bleed American right before it comes out.
Yeah.
Right around this time. But for some reason, and they I remember them postponing a Tim Allen, Dave Barry film called Big Trouble. That like the main, it's like a big farce. And the main thing that happens on it is I think there's a bomb on a plane.
I was going to say it's got to involve a plane, right?
It's a bomb on a plane, and they postponed it for like a year or something. really just like, were like, do not release this. Until everyone who witnessed 9/11 is dead. Like, get it out of here. But for some reason, Prime Minister of Malaysia, I guess he doesn't get killed.
Yeah, and it's a spoiler. Farce. It is
spoilers
a farce.
For Zoolander.
Sorry.
I just spoiled Zoolander, and I'm so sorry.
That is a movie I did see, not in theaters, definitely. And I caught up on it, I feel like, a long time afterwards. But I think its longest lasting impact is, unfortunately, the GIF version of them all in a buggy.
Oh, maybe.
There are some jokes that hold up, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he's a dumb guy.
No, I mean, you know? I think the movie's not bad. I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't know. I haven't watched Zoolander in a long time.
That's the thing, is I'm trying to, like, it could be better than I remember.
I bet it's better than Zoolander 2. I recall a tour de force performance from Jerry Stiller in that film. as a gentleman named Maury Bowles. So it can't be that bad of a movie.
No, can't possibly.
Nothing new on the list, really. Glitter has dropped precipitously to number 15. Shrek, in its 21st week out, is still at number 19.
I think we're going to have a kind of check-in with Shrek every
week. Have the cue. Can you get the Shrek watch stinger?
Shrek watch. Because how long is it at this point? It says there, right?
It's been out for, what is that, 21 weeks. So, exactly 6 months.
I really do wonder about that one.
Shrek?
If I saw it before or after.
Oh.
Because it's a pretty solid chunk of time for a big popular movie.
I think I saw it that summer, Shrek.
I feel like I probably did, but I don't have a clear memory of seeing it in a theater.
No, I wasn't making memories until I was 35, so I don't have a great recollection. So, it's great that I'm doing this show.
Yeah.
No,
I thought you said the top three were new?
Top three were all brand new.
What was the third one?
That was sorry. God, I completely skipped another movie that doesn't exist. It so doesn't exist. It slipped out of my mind again. It is called Don't Say a Word.
Okay. Don't.
Which is a Michael Douglas film When the daughter of a psychiatrist is kidnapped, he's horrified to discover that the abductor's demand is that he break through to a post-traumatic stress disorder suffering young woman who knows a secret.
Hold on.
Box Office Mojo, really. Not a great description here, guys.
This is like therapist heist.
It's like a therapist heist. It was, it's directed by the guy, Gary Fletter, who directed both Runaway Jury and Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, which is a movie I remember from the blockbuster, obviously, and the film Kiss the Girls, which I recall from being there was a Netflix show where the guy was the guy in Wisconsin that killed those people. And the kid had like a, what the fuck was it called? It's fine. It was like a big Netflix murder documentary. And one of the, and someone's false confession was that it was like exactly the scene from Kiss the Girls where they kill somebody. And he later recanted and said it was in the book that he read. That's what I remember about that movie. Anyways.
But then he went along and made this.
Yeah, don't say a word. A movie that nobody liked but made a lot of money.
Douglas probably still had a good cachet.
Yeah, I think so.
But also feels like the type of movies you don't really see much, because I bet this was a cheap movie to make, not many sets.
Yeah.
Because it's a therapist, I'm assuming they probably were in a room a lot of the time.
Yeah, but I mean, it cost $50 million, which is a lot for that kind of movie.
But probably some star power there.
It's a Michael Douglas. I wasn't. This movie made $100 million, which is
did it double that? Like that's insane.
This is a great cast, honestly. It's Michael Douglas, Sean Bean, Brittany Murphy.
It feels like they probably
Oliver Platt and clocky legend Famke Janssen.
I imagine it does some real off things with regards to psychology and psychiatry and the various themes it's tugging at.
Yeah.
But who knows? You know, could be surprised as well, like Zoolander.
You know, it's a movie notably features Heart Island in New York City, which is a Potter's Fields in the river that, like, you cannot go there. Huh. You have to get, like, a guided tour, and I think even then it's hard to get.
They probably spent a little money to do that.
Yeah, but it's a cool little thing. They have to exhume somebody's grave at Heart Island to find to find a code of some sort in this film.
Okay, I'm honestly getting more interested as you describe this.
Yeah, I mean, this is potential bonus episodes, movies that didn't exist from the time.
I did look up, speaking of The Musketeer.
Incredibly
hard to watch that film.
Oh, yeah?
Infuriating, but I did follow along the director's the director's
cinematography?
Filmography.
Filmography? Get the word.
Capricorn 1.
The O.J. Simpson film.
Yeah. I started watching it, and I enjoyed so much watching a movie that did not care about starting you just right in it in a way that was letting the audience figure it out for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Then you buckle up.
Okay. And then O.J. Simpson is there as well.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or
fortunately, if you love O.J. Simpson,
if you're that.
Which I know listeners will and do. So that's movies and entertainment. Now this week in a weird 2001 fall paranoia is a couple of events here.
Ooh.
It was on a Greyhound bus in Manchester, Tennessee, crashed on October 3rd, the day this episode aired, after somebody slit the throat of the driver.
Oh, my God.
Which I remember this being kind of a news story because they're like, is it terrorism? Because they're crashing buses now.
There was some
concern, which is not that big of a deal because at the same time, America had anthrax fever.
Yeah, I was really curious how quick that happened because in my memory
it was right afterwards. He's not at this point in time on October 3rd, he's not died yet. But Robert Stevens of the Sun, the tabloid, gets hospitalized this week and later dies.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first casualty of the anthrax mailings. But around this is the week that he goes to the hospital. So like that was going on, and also the first rumblings of the Patriot Act are being passed, are being like circulated around in the Senate and House right now.
I'm honestly
so it's a hell of a week.
Surprised it took that long.
I mean, I think,
but I guess they
there were some
lot.
Anti-terrorism acts that were passed like immediately, like in the days afterwards.
Yeah, and the authorization, I'll bet, happened right away.
But then it was starting to like get folded into something called the Patriot Act around now.
Mm.
And I believe by the end of the month, we do have the Patriot Act, which is an incredible thing that they did reverse engineer the words to say, which I think is, I think, very funny every time I think about it.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
It's, hold on, I'll pull it up. The USA Patriot Act, uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism.
Where was the P?
Hey.
Did you start it with uniting?
Providing.
America?
Providing.
Oh, wow.
Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools.
You can't
tools.
Do that with an acronym.
No, you can.
They, I guess. They really. Does.
Yeah, this is like a real failure of acronym stuff.
Like, what scuba is, I feel like, one of the most beautiful
self-contained
ones.
Underwater breathing apparatus.
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's the cellar door of acronyms.
Yeah. That's what you should aspire to, and this is bullshit in addition to all the other
reasons. It's good enough that it always makes... Yeah, scuba's good enough that it makes me think other things are acronyms, too.
Mm.
Like, scuba is so good that it makes me start wondering, is laser an acronym?
Isn't it?
Is it not? Is it? I thought... If laser's an acronym, I'm losing my mind. I know that taser is an acronym.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. Yeah. That's a really solid one. Yeah, taser's also good. I know this one off the top of my head. It is Tom Swift's electric rifle.
Real?
Uh-huh. Because there is a science fiction, like, pulp novel character named Tom Swift who... used in the books, he had like a gun that shot electricity at the bad guys. And the guy that invented the taser was like, this is just like the thing from the book I read as a kid. Like, it's literally the guy making like the Pain Matrix or whatever. Like, he's, you know, he's like, but it's like, the book is like, these are cool.
I have to be honest, I am shocked it didn't just come from taking putting a T instead of an L in laser.
Yeah. Like, the title of the book was Tom Swift and His Electric Rifle. As I was explaining this to you, I was like, I better be right.
And that's like a sci-fi book from the 40s?
It's a sci-fi book from, I don't know, hold on, yeah, let me see.
Tom Swift and His Electric Rifle, as it would be like 40s, 50s, maybe?
It is 1911.
1911.
Or Daring Adventures in Elephant Land. That's cool.
That's so whimsical.
Yeah, so it was the name of a gun made for shooting elephants with lightning. I guess. And now it's used to kill everyday people.
Hmm.
Anyways.
and weirdly.
Yeah.
Very phaser-like.
You know what?
How it looks.
In a lot of ways, very phaser-like. So that was that week in America. Between the last episode on September 26th to this week, October 3rd, 2001, what happened on Star Trek?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
So this one is called Fight or Flight.
Fight or Flight.
And you would think it might be an exciting, dynamic sort of episode.
Maybe with fighting or flighting. Either of them. But it is kind of neither.
It is. So here's the thing. I was kind of excited to do this show because I was like, this show is unfairly maligned in some ways. It's better than you think. But I think because I got to the gooder parts later, I forgot how bad it was at the beginning.
The gooder parts.
The gooder parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't deserve correct grammar. No. But they are gooder. So the thing is it opens up with a baffling scene where Hoshi has got her worm.
Sluggo. They've named the worm.
And look.
Sluggo.
I mentioned Capricorn 1 because that was you're just going in it, kind of, figure out what's going on here. But it was exciting and dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
This was not.
No.
Even with Phlox being there, which he does much better later in this episode. But yes. It was just, why do I care? She doesn't seem to care. He doesn't seem to care.
They've also, they've also, gotten the slug off screen.
Yeah, so you don't know why there's a slug. So you're also just kind of like, what?
Why is there? I mean, which is fine.
Should I know
stuff,
the slug?
Stuff can happen in between episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine. But they're like, he's just like, slug's all fucked up, huh? And she's like, yep. And then they're both like, sucks for this slug, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like us, how sad we are on this ship for 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks.
It's been two whole weeks. We haven't met any aliens yet.
Yeah. They do a shitty weapons test. I don't even care. Everyone's agitated and aimless. What is the tone they're going for on this, their first episode.
The first
post-
real episode. I feel like as myself, you know, I try to, as a writer of fiction,
mm-hmm.
I try to, when I'm watching these things and they seem like failures and sort of like my gut instinct, I try to think like, why?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong here?
Yeah.
And I feel like showing boredom is one of the hardest things you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially on television. It's so hard to show boredom in a way that is compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to really make the characters interesting. So, say, not the second episode of your show. Maybe. You know, like, you don't stick your characters in a fridge that they can't get out of on the second episode of the show.
Until we get Phlox in a finally good scene, because he's happy.
We love Phlox, don't we?
He's
folks?
Enjoying his synthetic proteins. He wants right. to watch two crew members mate.
Yeah.
He's weird, and we love him for that.
We love everything Phlox does to me is magic.
Mm-hmm.
If Phlox is on screen, I'm seated
mm-hmm.
and not pausing every 30 seconds to go do something else.
I'm engaged.
I'm engaged, or as Archer would say,
let's go.
Let's go.
And so they find a broken ship. It's Trip is so bored. Me too. That's what I wrote. He really wants to go on this ship because it's something to fucking do.
Yeah.
And Captain's like, no, I need my communications officer in case this ship that won't talk to us, somebody on there does want to talk to us. There's just some reason they wouldn't talk to us.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Archer's annoyed and says this thing. It's the book I read. I didn't mention the name. I realized it's 25-Year Journey,
mm-hmm.
Part 2 specifically, has okay. this chapter on Enterprise. It's much shorter than a lot of them, like the series. That book, I, after reading it and just knowing, especially early on, the kind of atmosphere that Jolene Blaylock.
You're contributing to it now with your thank misogyny you. By forgetting her name.
Yeah, thanks.
Uh-huh.
So Jolene, how she was treated, it sounds like, on that set. When I see how they treat her on the show, I can't stop thinking about that. And he's right. just saying, like, he's just doing like his little audio recording, like Captain Zoo. He was like, it'd be great to be on a mission without a Vulcan science officer who's always sucking the air out of the room. Yeah,
this bitch.
yeah.
The of note to me, a thing that is one of the first appearances of, and a thing that drove me completely out of my fucking gourd the mm-hmm. first time I watched the show,
uh-huh.
is when Archer is doing his narration,
uh-huh.
he's constantly being interrupted or wants to edit his own narration. So he's always saying computer start or computer stop, computer like delete that.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, who's like, use the pad or something, please? You don't have to say Siri, stop phone call now every fucking 7 seconds. It's now that I've mentioned it, you're going to notice it a lot also, and you're going to also be very mad.
I mean, once it was, and I realized, you know, I should have learned this years ago, that they have voice command on shows because it's better for the audience to have them talking to something.
Yeah, I hate watching people use their phones on TV. It sucks.
Yeah.
It's never good.
So that's why Star Trek did it in the first place, way back in the 60s, and they keep doing it. And then you have people today being like, I wish my phone could do that, and wait a minute, it's clunky because that was never the point.
Right.
It didn't actually make things easier. It was a storytelling device. Anyway.
So right. Like, it's handy in, like, narrow situations.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
For me to, like, skip ads on a podcast while I'm on my bicycle.
When I'm doing DIY something or fixing something with both my hands, I need to like take down notes about measurements or something.
Oh yeah.
I was like, wow, this is actually an easy, useful thing to have voice command or just talk to like do a voice. Anyway.
That's a good point. But
this is a tangent.
Hey, this is not the most compelling episode of television we're talking about today.
Something. But he admits anyway that even though she's being a real bee, that she's right and they shouldn't explore this thing. But really, the important thing about this scene that I really wanted to bring it up is that it establishes important canon. It's not good to give Porthos cheese.
It is not good to give Porthos cheese.
That's a thing in this show. Get ready for that.
Yeah, this is the first Porthos cheese watch. Play the stinger for that one as well.
And then we get to what it turns out as though the first scene didn't listlessly demonstrate this, that it's Hoshi's episode, and she's really not into this space thing, maybe, you know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I had a nice life.
Yeah.
Teaching a Vulcan to children in the rainforest.
In this paradise university in the middle of the rainforest.
Yeah, I was like hummingbirds reading out of my hand, and I was being fed guava by a hunk, and I was just teaching a language I knew.
Mm-hmm. And instead, she can't sleep, and she doesn't like being in the claustrophobic spacesuits.
She said the stars were going the wrong way on the side of the ship she was staying on, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
So, I don't know, but wouldn't that just mean if you just switched your bed around? Wouldn't then they go the other way?
Yes. Move your pillow.
Yeah.
Dog, I don't... She means the window is on the wrong side?
I guess. But that's... turn it off. Close it.
Turn the... It's...
Yeah. I'm sorry, it is cool that you have fucking stars out your window.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Check your privilege, Hoshi.
But clearly it's an attempt to establish that she's trying to find excuses that this is not where she fits.
Like, yeah, like she's stressed out about being in space, which is relatable to me.
This is also when I picked up, the first scene I realized I picked up, but they really go hard on it later, that what they are doing with the writing is making the metaphor that she's like this slug. Great writing for our women characters.
She's very much like Sluggo.
She's out of her element.
She's maybe. Out of her element. She's sick.
And it's not her... The container is wrong.
That's right.
So they do go on this spaceship. Trip has to wait. What they find on it are some aliens getting sucked. And
they're getting, like, milked.
Milked.
For their... Triglobulin.
Yes, they're
triglobulin. A word that I was like, they kept saying it, and I was like, oh, I wonder if this is like, despite me having watched every Star Trek ever made last year, into this year, a thing I don't remember them ever mentioning otherwise, but I was like, I wonder if it's like an important Star Trek substance that they are.
Yeah, sure.
Because like, they repeat, and like, you know, they're doing a prequel show. I feel like everything's going to be. Like, oh, we're going to see these aliens again.
That the point?
They're trying to, yeah. They don't even do, like, the annoying prequel thing. Like, again, prequels are annoying because they're always like, don't you want to know where this came from? I'm like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
But at least they're not even doing anything where anything ties to anything at this point.
Sure, yeah.
Where, like, the aliens, you never see these aliens again. I don't think.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, but they mentioned triglobulin, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's, like, an important substance. So I, like, went on the Memory Alpha to see if there was another mention of triglobulin. They only mentioned this episode. So it's not anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just similar to lymphatic fluid. So I don't know why they didn't just say lymphatic fluid.
It's this species. Yeah, it's this species.
They had to make up a word, for when they have three kinds of globs within them.
Well, I did appreciate that it gets Phlox on there to analyze them and say, like, oh, this stuff is used to make drugs.
Yeah,
medicines, drugs. Sometimes it's a boner medicine.
It's for boners, which is Phlox's area of expertise. We find out later on the show.
Yeah,
but it's just like keep it in your back pocket that this fucked up dude.
He's a freak.
He's a little freak in the sack
in the best way. I love Phlox.
He loves to fuck.
So this episode it feels like it's forcing something to happen constantly, like against its will or something. Yeah. And so they get on, they're like, should we go on? I don't know. Okay, let's go on there. Oh, there's aliens on here. Should we help them? I don't know. Let's leave. And then after being convinced by T'Pol they should leave, Archer goes, damn it, I shouldn't have left. That's the American way.
Yeah, leaving is for Europeans.
Yeah, so they go back, and this is when Phlox gets on there, figures out the Trigalbian thing, but then the bad guys come back. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
After they put a beacon on there that says, we're in distress, help, help.
Yeah.
The bad guys find
This whole time, Hoshi is trying to, like, translate their language, like, from their distress call.
Yes.
And it gets into the weirdness of this show with the language stuff, where they have the universal translator, but it doesn't really work.
Yeah, exactly.
And Hoshi's got to, like, manually do inputs for it. Oh, but yeah. But also she like learns how to speak this language out loud in like 6 hours.
So I was gonna say, when we get to the freaking the climax of this episode, again showing how bad this episode was, again, like you said, to position it as like the second episode, let's get this audience that liked that premiere enough to tag along.
Yeah,
they shoot their first torpedo and it just kind of bounces off the alien shield.
Rocks.
And I enjoyed that for just how like, haha, like this sucks. And so then what we actually get, this is about translation, because they did get the attention of the aliens who are getting milked. Their little guy comes back and they're cool. Actually, I like this alien. I liked his spaceship. I liked his interior. We kind of like walk back and forth around it.
It was cool.
I don't know why I liked that it made it feel more like a spaceship, but they have to do this tense Hoshi translation sequence where exactly what you're saying, it's this weird, poorly, I think, used narrative device that she has to like kind of fight with it, and it's hard, and she just loses all confidence.
And she's like afraid of doing it.
And then it's a fucking like, you know, use the Force, Luke, put away the targeting computer. You can do it yourself if you believe.
She also like,
I feel like
it's dumb for language. But. And like, okay, so like speaking a language, it's one of those things where if you are learning a language, like a second language, and you are like a little drunk or a little tired, or
you're playing a video game and you're a little stoned or
something. You actually tend to do better at it because you're sort of like your human, like your hindbrain is activated and just like you power past whatever you're, you know, what's the one in the front?
Yeah.
Your frontal lobe. That's like
definitely a thing.
So like it gets past it, but also she says like to Archer like it's not Spanish, and then she starts speaking it like it's Spanish. You know. Like, it's not that alien of a language.
Yeah. It's just, you can't set up the difficulty bar that high, and then the way she does it is by just, like, no-scope this. I'm just gonna, you know, I've never skateboarded before, but I can take this hill, believe me.
It's like, well,
I've roller-related, so this shouldn't be a problem.
And, like, we've established that she's, like, a genius at this stuff already. But they just, they make it seem so hard, and then...
When you have the newer Star Treks, and there is specifically, I'm thinking of a Strange New Worlds episode about translation.
Yeah.
It's interesting and fun, and it's believable in how, like, they figure out they're kind of like, you know, Rosetta Stone, which is a, like, more believable instant way to translate.
There's a very famous episode of Next Generation about translation.
Right. Oh, right.
A very, 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 very famous episode of Next Gen.
That one's so good that I even think about it as, like, language, but of course it is, like, literally that idea that, like, an alien language could be so...
Alien.
That it would be truly baffling, even with a magic translation device, which he has in that episode.
Yeah,
it's
like
just, it doesn't work.
There's a thing about Star Trek generally, and like I understand why, and they have an in-show explanation for it, which is dumb as hell. But like, none of the aliens are that alien.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all just like, we're just like a weird kind of person.
Yeah,
in some way or whatever. And very rarely are there like aliens that are like fully like, you are a life form that evolved on the other side of the universe in a different environment with different needs and different in your society would look completely fucking different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I know it's, you can't come up with a new race every week for television that feels completely like new in some way, because it's really hard to write.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's not that many, trying to think of like instances in fiction in which the aliens are like really, really alien.
So,
and I can think of like The Sparrow, if you ever read that book.
So even, I'm trying to think of something more Star Trek-y. And like, have you seen Babylon 5?
I've not.
So that one, I feel like, tries to do a little bit more of the, like, more alien aliens. But, you know, that means, like, a gaseous alien that is always inside a giant. Very weird suit.
That's cool.
But it's at least, you know, weirder. And if I remember correctly, it has even more things that goes farther. And I feel like there were two in-universe explanations before the, like, ridiculous, we're all from the same genetic precursor alien species. There was kind of this...
I review that explanation. Yeah. One fart noise.
I feel like before that Next Gen episode even, they sometimes touched on this barely of just like, oh, yeah, we just don't let those aliens in this. This is just a humanoid aliens thing.
Yeah.
We just, and like, I guess maybe we probably, maybe we would not hang out with the gaseous aliens or the fly, the like, in a way, this Enterprise does go a little farther in its later season.
That's true. There's the one weird guy. for sure.
Well, I'm thinking of the time that where they, I guess, you know, spoiler. There's an alien race that there's five the Zindi species.
Yeah, that's right. And there's
same planet.
And like one of them is not humanoid, yeah. Really. Yeah.
One's aquatic. One's very. I mean, they literally do. It's again when they break it down, it becomes very. I don't know. Earth.
Sure. Yeah.
Like,
again,
there's fish one, bird one, insect one, primate one. It's like. But it was farther than often Star Trek goes, as you're
for planning. Sure. Yeah, and I just think about, like, literally, I can think of two books that, like, do the translation thing that's very interesting, and it's, like, considered. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of The Sparrow, and I'm thinking of Embassy Town by China Mayville. And both of them are just, like, they just consider, like, what an alien language would be like in a way that is interesting, and I wish if they're going to do an episode that's only about that, that they could have thought about it more than just, like, their language is a normal kind of language, but... figure it out? I don't know.
The more I think about it, yeah, I have read there's like a memory of Empire. Entire novels can become about translation and the bridging that kind of gap that aliens really would have, even if they were also. We even had that like
five
digit thing.
Hell, like if you are talking to somebody speaking another Earth language, even from the same family of languages that your language is from. There's actually no such thing as a direct translation of most words that are not, like, nouns.
Yeah.
Like, the word for apple is obviously translatable exactly. But, like, the word for, like, a feeling or an action, like, there's so many kinds of words, mostly adjectives and verbs, that are, like, completely untranslatable that they are... You can only really understand them if you are a native speaker of the language or if you're fluent. Because, like, they mean different things in different places. And it's so, like, lazy to just be like, well, I figured out how they say apple and we're done.
Or they really, what ends up being sort of shouting made up words and kind of getting a little bit like of an accent that I guess is alien to convince him of a pretty complicated idea, which is that, this is the thing that makes it so funny to me, is Archer says, make that alien understand that the tech on that ship that was draining their guys was from that alien, not our aliens, and if they scan that, they'll see that the tech is not the same. Got that?
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, alien, blah, 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 blah. And the guy's like, oh, right, all right. It turns around, presses some button, doohickeys, and then starts shooting on the other alien.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, Archer didn't really even say, like, you know, get him to fight on our side, like, save us.
Right.
But whatever she said made this guy immediately switch sides and start shooting. And I guess it was like, look on your scanners, find evidence, and, you know, obviously this is the bad guy.
He's from a race of aliens with no interiority whatsoever. Yeah, it's very strange. And also, like, the climactic thing where she's, like, having the conversation with him in whatever language he's speaking.
Uh-huh.
The language itself sounds so goofy that they're just like yelling gibberish at each other and just keeps cutting back and forth, like in like them doing like child gibberish.
Right.
And you're like, this isn't very serious at all.
It's not the tone the of danger? The show, but I almost wish it had the shitty, like barely intelligible version of what she is supposedly saying. Cause she doesn't suddenly, She doesn't suddenly understand it completely.
Right.
Just enough to convey this very simple idea that the technology in that ship that's sucking the aliens is not theirs. It's the other guy. She's just that guy instead of us.
Yeah. He's sucking them off.
Yeah.
Not us.
But then we get, and this is the thing that you mentioned earlier about how this alien we never hear from again, but they drop in his little like Archer notation at the end that, these guys are real interesting. They're androgynous and live 400 years.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's nifty.
Sure.
But thinking about it, that means this could be an alien who's alive and met Picard.
Yeah, this is like living memory for these guys.
So if you are, you know, not even going to make like incredible weird aliens, you're not going to make too many, you know, you don't want to touch those prequel, you know, this is stuff that it could impact the future.
Sure.
Or the first time they do things. I'll admit that I think some of the better episodes are when they give in and finally just do some of the prequel-ass shit.
Sure.
They literally, like, because I read the 25-year journey, they didn't want to do that stuff early on. They really tried not to, which is why it's not there. And when it is, it's pretty clunky in the first season.
Yeah. I mean, if they don't want to do that stuff, my question for them is, why are they doing a prequel show?
Exactly.
which is like,
it's baffling.
Again, like, I'm also not like a big fan of prequels and don't think necessarily they ever need to exist ever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I can understand a scenario in which a prequel show exists in Star Trek, where there's like literally hundreds of years of stuff that could have happened that doesn't really impact the shows that we've seen. But
that's kind of like,
yeah, you got to keep the, if you're going to do a prequel show like that, I feel like you have to keep the stakes moderately low, because then otherwise you're like trying to like reverse engineer these like big events that happen or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Which is why like I think Strange New World functions, because it's just about these people and less about like them like saving the universe or whatever.
Establishing canon, yeah, and shit.
Exactly. Yeah.
It definitely feels like there's a fight, or that's evident based on what I read in the book, that there are people, like some of the writers on staff, even the like whole weird court whispers about how the like, writing was done with Brannon and
Berman.
Brannon Bergen.
Brannon Bergen.
That it was a fight always. So it had this muddled, didn't really try to do either thing very well. And talked about, you know, this whole first season being before they launched the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, that's what even they wanted to do. And that, I feel like that could have been that, like, much smaller stakes. It's just about getting this ship off the ground. And the finale would have been them launching the Enterprise.
Yeah. So apparently...
And the execs didn't like that, so...
God. So I'm looking, and apparently the Axanar, who are the aliens in this episode...
Oh, yeah?
...were mentioned...
Oh.
...in the original series.
Okay, so they did it.
They did do the
cool,
thing.
Cool, I guess.
But, like... In a way that's sort of like, I don't know, it's unsatisfying. They made them too cool.
I suppose, yeah, they made them too cool. And I guess I'm homing on this fact, like, you said it could live 400 years, and that makes me think this is the prequel. He could have lived through all of the fucking other series, so, but, you know, he's just there, I guess.
He's just there. He's there believing what anyone says to him about a third party and killing them. So maybe it's for the best.
Yeah.
Maybe it's for the best that this guy isn't around.
I'm going to write that.
Because he does sort of just do... If you just speak to him convincingly enough in his own language, he will just do whatever you say, including murder.
Yes, yeah.
So, like, I don't know. That seems like... I don't want them around in my utopia. You know?
It's the reason they didn't join.
They never became the Federation, because they keep killing people. They're very gullible.
Androgynous, live for 400 years.
Extraordinarily gullible.
Extraordinary.
So gullible.
Okay, so actually the last thing is that, I guess, to close off this metaphor, she's not like the slug. The slug does need to be on its planet. It was fucking dying, but she is fine, I guess, on the spaceship. I don't know.
They really mixed it, because then she puts the slug down and she's like, and she takes it out of like the container store ass cage they've got it in. It looks like it's like a Tupperware.
Yeah,
with like, a clasp.
Maybe that's why it was dying.
It really does look like it's from the container store, which I really love. Like, I could put a lot of pencils in there. But they take it out. She takes it out of the thing and puts it on the planet. And she's like, it's not the same, and you're far from home, but you'll be fine. And I guess she's talking about herself.
I didn't even realize.
That's not what, no, because like, at the end of the last episode, you might not have heard because you were like bleeding out of your ears from watching that fucking thing. But at the end of the last episode, they're like, set course for like some inhabited planet. And I guess they got there, and the joke is, I guess, that they only found slugs.
See, okay.
And they took a slug from there. But the thing is, like, I had to interpolate that after reading the memory alpha on the episode.
That could be a fun little thing. They keep saying about, like, glad we went out here to find slugs. And as hammy as that could have gone,
yeah,
it would at least been something more, like, interesting than boredom.
That is a joke from a Voyager episode, which is at least something. It's at least something.
Well... I know there are some bright spots in this first season, believe me, so stay tuned, please.
Yeah, and nothing else bad happens in 2001 to America.
That too. There'll be much more to look forward to there, I'm sure. thank you for listening, and... Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Yeah. Keep an eye out. We'll have a Patreon up soon for more episodes of the show.
Bye.
Bye.